From WYPR, I'm Sheila Kast. We're on the record. Former USA Gymnastics Dr. Larry Nassar abused hundreds of athletes, and competitors in other sports are raising alarms about more abuse at the hands of coaches and officials, as well as cover-ups of inappropriate or illegal behavior. We hear from swimmer Nancy Hogshead Makar, now a lawyer and advocate, who says that for years the Olympic community shrugged off its responsibility to protect athletes.
The legal structure behind the club and Olympic sport movement was so bad. There was really nothing to protect the athlete. There was no insurance. The national governing body said, "It's not my problem. It's the parents' problem. It's the police's problem."
And we speak with filmmaker Jill Yesko about her forthcoming web series, Broken Trust, about abuse in Olympic athletics. It's on the record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Kast. We're On the Record. Last year, headlines blared the brave testimony of athletes against Larry Nassar, former team doctor for USA Gymnastics. Dozens of the more than 150 women and girls Nassar molested described how the abuse affected their lives. They asked how such widespread abuse could continue for decades. Complaints about Nassar date back to 1997, and why no members of the U.S. Olympic Committee were present to hear their testimony. 2 months ago, Congress held hearings to examine the U.S. Olympic Committee's response to the abuse. And in February, President Trump signed legislation authorizing the U.S. Center for Safe Sport to create policies requiring Olympic-affiliated staff to report suspected child abuse. What can be done to prevent abuse in sports and to ensure justice for victims? How does pressure to win at all costs make athletes vulnerable to abuse? Later, we'll hear from a former Olympic swimmer who's working to raise awareness about abuse and hold perpetrators accountable. First, Jill Yesko is a journalist and former competitive cyclist who represented the United States in the 1983 World University Games. Her documentary, Tainted Blood, examines how the U.S. cycling team's success at the 1984 Olympics, winning the first U.S. medals in cycling since 1912, unraveled due to a doping scandal. The film premiered last October at the International Cycling Film Festival. Jill Yesko, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Joining us by phone from Michigan is Eva Rodansky, a former long track skater who represented USA speed skating on the national circuit. She retired from the sport in 2006 and has become an anti-abuse activist. Thanks for joining us, Eva.
Thank you for inviting me.
Jill, you're working on creating a web series about the sports reform movement. What topics are you intending to cover?
Well, originally it was going to be focused on the Me Too movement, but I see that this is much, much larger. There are athletes who have been touched by abuse on many levels, not just sexual abuse. A huge problem is financial abuse by sports governing bodies and the U.S. Olympic Committee. So this is going to be a holistic look.
Financial abuse.
Yes. So did you know that the CEO of USA Track and Field makes almost $2 million and the average income for 150 athletes who ranked in the top 10 of their events in 2015 earned about $17,000 a year? That's $8 an hour. So there's a huge mismatch between the officials at the highest level of sport and your top-ranked athletes.
Why are you interested in this topic of abuse?
I'm interested in anything that affects athletes. I was a competitive athlete myself. I did not experience any firsthand abuse, but I have witnessed what the win-at-all-costs attitude that is prevalent in so many sports has done to athletes. It's really a very, very corrosive mindset.
Eva, your speed skating career was cut short
due to what you allege was preferential treatment for another athlete due to inappropriate relationship between her and the coach. Tell us what happened.
So I actually made a comeback to speed skating in 2001 after completing my education. And at the time, the U.S. sprint coach, Mike Crowe, who later became the high-performance team director, was having an affair with my direct rival in the sport. But when I first came back to the sport, I really just heard this and blew it off as a rumor. But as time went on, I saw more and more of how she was given preferential treatment, exemption from team rules, and she really seemed to be protected up until I felt that the 2006 Olympic team selection criteria was being rigged so that U.S. speed skating could choose their favorites after all the results came in. And I felt that he had a conflict of interest and that that allowed him to really play favorites in that situation.
And she was chosen for the team and you were not?
Yes.
So, Eva, you decided to retire. U.S. Speed Skating fired Mike Crowe in 2006, but the next year he was hired by Speed Skating Canada. And it was around that time you started speaking out about what had happened. Why did you think it was important to speak out?
I actually began speaking out about the various forms of corruption that I experienced in U.S. speed skating around late 2004 when I started blogging. You know, Jill Yesko mentioned financial abuse of athletes, and I certainly experienced that. U.S. speed skating could really choke off the careers of athletes that they wanted to marginalize, and also because the governing body has a monopoly over these sports and they have a monopoly over team sponsorship, they really have control over how athletes can support themselves. And that was one of the first things that I was blogging about. But as the Olympic trials selection process approached for 06 and the fallout of that process, I actually was blogging more and more about the sexual favoritism. And I also communicated with the U.S. Olympic Committee's athlete ombudsman in the spring of 2006 about what had happened surrounding the Olympic selection process and Crowe's conflict of interest.
And it took until, am I right, January of this year for Speed Skating Canada to investigate the allegations against Crowe?
Yes, that is correct. And I think one of the reasons why that happened is because when Crowe was fired from U.S. speed skating in the spring of 06, it really wasn't discussed in the media or in the public anything about the reasons why he was fired. So there was kind of plausible deniability for any sort of sexual misconduct allegations that really didn't come to light until Speed Skating Canada started to investigate him.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with former elite speed skater Eva Rodansky and filmmaker Jill Yesko. We're talking about sexual abuse in athletics and the movement to increase accountability of the U.S. Olympic Committee and its national governing bodies. Jill, it seems that even though athletes are the ones who compete and win the medals, they don't have very much power in the sport.
No, so few athletes are empowered, particularly female athletes. I just came across an example of, I want to go back to the sexual abuse, that even after you, a sports governing body, does ban a coach or take some action, the abuse still can continue. Just recently, there was a 16-year-old Olympic hopeful in diving. And she had been abused in an abusive sexual relationship with her coach in Ohio. The coach was fired in 2014, but it wasn't investigated until 2015. And then it's alleged that even after the coach was banned by USA Swimming and Diving, he continued to pursue this diver. And I mean, a 16-year-old girl, how much power really does she have? When you're an elite athlete, your world is really small. You've got maybe school, and you have your sport and your competitions. It's not like you, and you're in an echo chamber. It's not like you might have a lot of other people telling you, wow, this is really, really wrong. It's very self-reinforcing. So I can only imagine how this young lady felt.
Eva, what criticisms have you faced since you came forward with allegations?
Well, it's hard to hear some of it, where people are assuming that you're coming forward to get attention or that you're just sour grapes and you never really had the talent to make it anyway. And another reason why it's so hard to criticize is because these people hold your Olympic dreams in their hand and they have so much power over you. And often these organizations are extremely sensitive to criticism, which is why there's so much retaliation against whistleblowers.
I mentioned, Eva, the testimony about sexual abuse committed by Larry Nassar. Gymnasts have also come forward with allegations of physical and verbal abuse committed by Coach John Gettert. Is there a similar trend of accusations in speed skating?
There were. I know of allegations in training groups as far back as 1994-95 that a really good friend of mine who was training with me, he didn't tell me about that the coach had done until we got together again in 2002. And then more recently, around 2012, two-thirds of the short track national team had to boycott their coach because of allegations of physical and emotional abuse. And that coach was later fired by U.S. speed skating.
Jill, you have studied rules around doping. Does it seem that the process for preventing abuse or following up on claims of abuse is equally thorough?
I think that the example of doping is an excellent one. I think that most of the world agrees that doping is wrong, at least on some level, either ethically or against, you know, an athlete's, or deleterious to an athlete's health. And we've known this for a long time. Yet, at this year's Tour de France, Chris Froome, who is one of the top athletes, was allowed to compete after even the organizers of the Tour de France had said, we don't want him in because he has had positive drug tests. We keep passing different doping regulations, and we have WADA, the World Anti-Doping Organization, which is tasked with overseeing doping, yet they still receive funding from the International Olympic Committee. So, you know, until they have a complete divorce and are allowed to behave independently, they're not going to be able to be effective. And I see this in the same way with the movement toward reforming sport. You know, the Olympic Committee needs to step away. We need an independent, almost inspector general.
Eva, do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I would love to see a truth commission and an investigation of all the forms of corruption in our Olympic sports system right now. And I think that that's really the only way that we will find out and get to the bottom of the root causes of sexual abuse in Olympic sports and how to plan to just root that out and deal with it in the future.
Eva, I really appreciate your talking with us about it. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Eva Rodansky is an activist and former long track skater who represented USA speed skating on the national circuit. We need to take a quick break here on The Record. Journalist and former competitive cyclist Jill Yesko will stick with us. And when we're back, we'll talk about legislative efforts to increase oversight and prevent abuse with a former Olympic swimmer. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay tuned.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. Allegations of rampant sexual abuse in USA Gymnastics dominated news coverage during the trial of former team doctor Larry Nassar. But USA Gymnastics is not the only sport to be rocked by accounts of abuse. An investigation published in February by the Southern California News Group alleges that more than 250 coaches and officials connected with USA Swimming faced arrest or discipline for sexual assault or sexual misconduct against children. How can abuse be prevented? How should perpetrators be brought to justice?
Former competitive cyclist and journalist Jill Yesko is with me. Jill's documentary, Tainted Blood, explored the blood doping scandal surrounding the 1984 Olympic Games in Los Angeles. Now she's developing a web series about abuse within the U.S. Olympic community. Joining us now by phone is Nancy Hogshead Makar, a former Olympic swimmer. She won 3 gold medals and 1 silver medal at the 1984 Olympics. Today, she's CEO of Champion Women, a nonprofit that provides legal advocacy for girls and women in sports. Welcome to On the Record.
Thank you, Sheila. Good to be here.
Nancy, how did you get into this line of work advocating for athletes who have been abused?
Well, I had a personal experience. My coach, after 30 years of advocacy, is finally on the banned list, and his name is Mitch Ivey. And what should have been very easy, because Mitch Ivey never denied having sexual relationships with the swimmers that he coached that were underage. So he would say, this is my girlfriend, and she's 16, and I'm 33. So I had that personal experience, but professionally, as an attorney, I was working with schools and working with sexual violence, what was going on with schools. And then the same type of story would give me a call, and it was in a club and Olympic sport movement. This is right around 2010. And I realized that the legal structure behind the club and Olympic sport movement was so bad. There was really nothing to protect the athlete. There was no insurance. The national governing body said, you know, threw up their hands, it's not my problem, I don't do that. It's the parents' problem. It's the police's problem. And seeing how bad the structure was made me jump in full force. This has really been an 8-year endeavor for Champion Women and for myself.
So let me just ask you to underscore that line, the difference between playing for a school and playing for a club.
Mm-hmm. Sure. A club is a wholly owned business that is not subject to the normal civil rights laws that schools are subject to, right? So schools have Title IX. They've got to predict and prevent, and they have to tell kids, here's who you report to, and then the school's got to make sure that the kid doesn't run into their assailant. There's a whole bunch of things that happens for a club program. First of all, they're not used to having any oversight whatsoever. And just so everybody out there understands, there's the Olympic Committee, right, which is governed by statute. Congress in 1978 made a statute we call the Sports Act that governs how the Olympic movement in the United States operates. And it's a monopoly. If you want to be in the Olympics, you have to go through their system. So, you know, there's USA Swimming and USA Diving and USA Taekwondo and USA Gymnastics, et cetera, right? Well, different sports developed different kinds of ethos within that system. So gymnastics developed to be a really cruel sport. The level of obedience and compliance was pretty astronomical. As opposed to swimming, that ethos is, you just don't see it. But what you do see a lot of is coaches think it is just fine to date or have a sexual relationship with one of the athletes they coach. I still get too many calls from what I would consider really good guy coaches who ask me, if it's not illegal, what's wrong with it? And what they're really saying is they don't understand why power dynamics prevent being able to have that kind of a relationship. A lawyer never asks that. My clients are 50 years old in many cases, right? I cannot have a romantic or sexual relationship with them or I'll lose my license. Same with therapists, same with prison guards, same with teachers, same with any time that you've got a power-type relationship. They just, you know, and that's the fault of the Olympic Committee for not educating them and not making it clear to them this very strict prohibition.
This year you lobbied on behalf of the Protecting Young Victims from Sexual Abuse and Safe Sport Authorization Act. It was signed into federal law in February. What does this legislation do?
So the new legislation does a number of things that, by the way, the United States Olympic Committee could have done by themselves, and they did not. So, you know, USOC could have said, hey, adults cannot be alone with children unless they're in an observable and interruptible distance. So the statute does that. Number two is it makes everybody within the Olympic movement a mandatory reporter. So they have 24 hours to report something to officials. If it's sexual abuse, they also have to report to this newly created United States Center for Safe Sport. The statute also extends the statute of limitations that a victim can sue their perpetrator, extends it to 10 years. It also authorizes the United States Center for Safe Sport. Okay, it's modeled somewhat after the United States Anti-Doping Agency in that it is a separate entity that is designed to provide independence and expertise in being able to root out the problem. And it gives a legal duty to the Olympics, the national governing body, and the U.S. Center for Safe Sport that extends to the child. So before, we used to hear that the legal position of the Olympic Committee was not our job. And so this statute wipes that away. If they know that there's a particular type of abuse and they know that there is a problem with a particular coach out there and they don't do anything about it to protect athletes and somebody gets hurt, they're liable.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with Nancy Hogshead Makar, former Olympic swimmer and CEO of Champion Women, an advocacy group for girls and women in sports. Also with us is journalist Jill Yesko, who is developing a web series about abuse in Olympic athletics. We're talking about efforts to protect athletes and hold abusers accountable. Jill, what do you think makes athletes vulnerable to abuse?
I think what makes athletes vulnerable to abuse, particularly Olympic athletes, is that the stakes are so incredibly high, particularly in sports where only perhaps one person is selected for the Olympic team. The pressure is just immense. You also have the pressure from perhaps your family and your coaches who have made tremendous sacrifices on your behalf. I mean, think of the mom who got up every morning at like 3 o'clock in the morning to drive you to practice. There's the uncertainty of being an athlete. You don't know, will I win? Am I good enough? I mean, take all of your insecurities and maybe multiply them by a million, and there you have it. You know, superficially, you might put on a good front. You know, you put on your uniform and you're tough, but inside, I'm speaking like I have my competitor's hat on now. You know, you're like, can I do this? Can I break the record? Am I really good enough? And then you have a coach who, if it's a good coach, they'll know how to bring out the best in you. If it is a coach who is out for their own game, they will know how to manipulate you for their own advantage.
Nancy, will Safe Sport be able to keep up with the claims of abuse? I've referenced hundreds of allegations within just two sports, gymnastics and swimming.
Since the United States Center for Safe Sport has opened, which was March of 2017, they've had over 1,000 official complaints. 80% of them have come from the last year alone. So these aren't ancient history. They're just coming forward now. These are current, ongoing problems. There's no district attorney's office that could handle that. There's no Title IX. There's no HR department. They need money, and they need to be hiring and scaling up very quickly. Champion Women is doing everything we can to make sure that they're successful. When we hear about a practice that they have that is incompatible with, say, how a Title IX office would do it or whatnot, we're very clear as to letting them know, here's what a best practice is.
Let me ask you both, what comes next? Nancy, what do you see coming next?
Champion Women is trying hard to come up with better educational programming. The current educational programming is deficient in that it doesn't alert athletes that the biggest risk to them is not a stranger. It's not one of the volunteers or the officials. By far, by a factor of five, the biggest danger is their coach. And because that's who their members are, they don't want to offend the coach. So the training materials don't really highlight that, and they really need to. And letting them know, like, what the boundaries are way before you get to good touch, bad touch, that you're talking about not being alone with them and not getting text messages individually and not being social media members, all these sort of boundary issues that if coaches and athletes abide by, athletes will be protected.
And Jill, when will you start taping your web series?
We are starting on July 31st, so it's coming right up with the first cohort of athletes. So I'm really excited about that.
What do you hope this web series accomplishes?
I hope the web series will give voice to athletes, both male and female, who have experienced abuse, but also will come forward with positive examples of their relationships with their coach. I think that Greg Louganis, the former Olympic gold medal diver, is a fantastic example of this. Greg was marginalized by USA Swimming and Diving, even though he was, the best that they had at the 84 and 88 Olympics. Greg was HIV positive at the time and was not out of the closet. And the person who was his absolute confidant, who really gave him, who protected him and gave him the ability to be the best that he could be, was his coach. And that is a story that I want to tell in my series.
What's it going to be called?
My series is called Broken Trust.
Keep in touch with us.
Absolutely.
As it's ready. And I'm grateful to you both. Thank you both.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Sheila.
Nancy Hogshead-Makar is a former Olympic swimmer, a gold medalist, and CEO of Champion Women. Jill Yesko is a journalist, filmmaker, and former competitive cyclist. At the On the Record page at WIPR.org, links to lots more information. I'm Sheila Cass. Glad you're listening On the Record. Join us again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.